Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes, a great follow at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, near RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. We are grateful for the support, continuing support of our sponsors at Owner Box, and we're going to tell you a little bit about them later on in the show. But for now, off the top, AJ, I have three things that I want to run by you. I'm looking forward to your reaction and knocking it around between us. First of all, there's a new executive leadership in Montreal. Jeff Gorton becomes the executive VP, replacing GM Marc Bergeron, who was fired last week. Do you want to see, for instance, Patrick Waugh replacing him? Or the front runner that I'm hearing about is a guy who used to be a former player, another former player in the league, but he's in the executive ranks in Tampa as their director of hockey ops, and his name is Matthew Darche. And that fulfills, both of these guys fulfill one of the requirements. They got to speak French. Jeff Gorton certainly does not.
Yeah, the thing I like about the hire, so I get why the team always wants to hire, you know, a GM and or coach that are French speaking. I totally understand that. You know, the fan base is such that they speak French. I mean, that's, so you have to be able to communicate with them. But I like this move to kind of break it into two, like essentially two jobs, right? Like Jeff Gorton now becomes kind of the behind the scenes guy. So in that sense, like, it doesn't really matter that he can't speak French because he's not going to be the, like, face of the GM aspect of it. And then they bring in somebody else who will be, like, the GM and do more of the front-facing side of it. And so I really like that because as much as I agree with why they want to go that route, you have to imagine, like, they're always limiting themselves, right? They're always limited to this subset of guys available for coaches and the general manager. So I do like the two player shift. The name I've actually heard tossed out most, obviously a little further away than you, Paul, but is Daniel Briere,
right?
Former, you know, obviously from Quebec, spent most of his career, I guess you would say, like Phoenix, Buffalo, Philadelphia, some sort of combination of those three teams. Did have a one season stint with Montreal. So I actually really like that hire as well, but I don't think there's any names that I've seen that would necessarily be bad for the team. I do think as an outside observer, as a non-Habs fan, Patrick Waugh would be the fantastic choice because I'm sure that would not blow up in their face ever at all.
Can you imagine the first time things go awry if he gets upset like he did in that nine spot game that he gave up, his last effort in goal? I think that would be fun, fireworks city. And I think that's the least likely option of the three that we covered. And I love the pick that you brought up. Daniel Briere certainly is another name that was mentioned. Darche, though, is a guy that is maybe the lesser known of all three. He, too, was a former NHLer, and he's cutting his teeth, as I said, in Tampa. And that would be an interesting move because it would weaken the front office, per se, of a division rival, and maybe Montreal might consider that if they do get permission to talk to the guy. But I think there are three interesting choices, and I think that they're faced with a bit of a task, though, AJ, with the salary cap issues that they face, Shea Weber's situation, and long-term contract, probably going to wind up on LTIR for the rest of it, and maybe Carey Price will be an issue, too, going forward, given that he's just started a long-term deal, and he's had a bit of a turbulent season and hasn't even played yet. So trouble in Montreal, and I'm curious to see how they dig out of it. Second issue, AJ, and this one I tipped you off before the show. There was a talk show here in Toronto mentioning Brad Marchand. We talked about last week that he got suspended for an incident and a slew foot incident. And he further vilified himself by chirping at Artemi Panarin and kind of getting to the heart of him with a couple of well-timed and well-executed chirps that talk about his homeland and kind of chided him for some of the things that he's been going through off the ice with the Russian hierarchy over there. So I ask you, like it was put on the radio, when you think about Brad Marchand, do you think about Brad Marchand, the all-star winger who's likely to be the first line winger on Team Canada, or and future Hall of Famer in all likelihood, or do you think about the super pest that licks faces and slew foots and is responsible for a myriad of issues that have gotten him suspended in his career?
Well, I mean, I do think there's some perspective that needs to be had here. You and I obviously are fans of teams that play against him a little bit more frequently, the Atlantic, and then obviously the Penguins have had plenty of clashes with Boston over the years as well. So I will say you and I probably have a bit of a skewed perspective. I'll acknowledge that. But in answer to your question, absolutely the first thing I think of when I think of Brad Marchand is dirty player. Like, maybe not dirty, but like cheap, obnoxious. I mean, this is a second slew footing suspension in his career. You know, there's you look at his list, there's elbowing twice, clipping twice, spearing on there as well. Like, none of these are, I don't know, it's in, like none of them are, it's hard to say excusable. I don't want to say excusable because anytime there's like a suspension, it's really not excusable. But none of them are like, oh, this happened in the course of play and like, you know, you could see where it accidentally happened. It's still a suspensionable offense, but, you know, you could give the player the benefit of the doubt that maybe it wasn't intentional. Like, you look at this list of stuff and it's like, nah, you knew what you were doing on each one of these.
Yeah, and that's the part that I can't get past. And it comes down to character issues. And I know a baseball Hall of Fame makes an issue of some of that stuff, and as well as some of the other off-field stuff that happens in that sport. So I could see him maybe not getting in as a first ballot Hall of Famer with some reporters who carry that same grudge that I'll admit to myself, and maybe you do too, but I won't speak for you. But an interesting case will come around when he is eligible for sure, and I can't wait to see it. He's got miles to go in his career, though. So we don't.
Should be interesting to note, though, Paul, you said we're never going to talk about Brad Marchand again on this show. And now you just devoted an entire segment to talking about him.
I know. It's a new season. I'm feeling good. I figured I'd give the guy a reprieve. And I think talking about him creates interesting discussion. So hopefully when people listen to this pod and download it, I'm curious to see what kind of reaction we get from people who are on either side of the issue when it comes to his name. And the third one, AJ, that I want to talk about is Nazem Kadri. Maybe I can call him Brad Marchand light, because he came back to Toronto yesterday, and I mentioned to you fair that you probably didn't see this interview, but he did an interview locally with Christine Simpson of Hockey Night in Canada, and he kind of chided the media, saying, I don't really know why I got traded out of Toronto. I don't really know what I did wrong. Well, I'm here to tell you the straight goods. He got suspended twice when he was a Maple Leaf in the playoffs. And the club lost a big advantage that they had in terms of depth at center because of his absence for the duration of the playoffs. And then he did it again with Colorado last year. So he's got to be walking a bit of a tightrope in terms of his behavior. And I can't wait to see what version of him we get in the postseason. But if he wants to know why he was traded out of Toronto, that's why. I'd like to know what you think.
Well, to your point, Paul, he's been suspended six times. I mean, so one, that's obviously a lot. But you look at the dates on these suspensions, the very first one is in November. But after that, it's March, April, and then May. It's like he only gets suspended at the end of the year. So to your point, Paul, like it is clear that it's an issue. Like, dude, like clearly you get suspended at the worst time at this point, almost every year. I would agree. I think they had to make that decision, you know, to move on from him because, like you said, the timing of those suspensions is just awful.
Yeah, and I mean, talking about his on-ice performance this year, he's been fantastic. We both know that he's scoring a ton, and he's really bridge the gap that they had when McKinnon was out of the lineup, and we'll talk about McKinnon's return to their lineup and the impact that it will have. So he's really been a bit of a godsend for them, leading the team in scoring this year so far. But it's just like, you know, I'm excited about the Maple Leafs going 15-2 in their last 17 games. But I'm the first one to say it's November, folks. It's not March, April, or May when it matters. So this is like an 82-game dress rehearsal for the likes in Colorado and Toronto. The serious shooting starts much later in the season, and we'll see what both teams are made of at that point, and if this guy can keep his act clean. So, AJ, those are the headline news. We want to dive in, though, to our look at the teams, because there's a lot of streaks going both directions. So this is a streaky edition of the Puckcast, and I can't wait to dig into it. So let me kick it off with a look at Anaheim. This is the club that is scoring up a storm this year. Their goals for is way up. They're getting decent enough goaltending that they win more often than they have in the last couple of years. They went 3-1 last week. And Andrew Stolarz is a guy that we've talked about in this space, wondering if and when he's going to get a shot. He was in net for 2 games and 2 wins last week, a total of 5 goals against. He's not going to unseat John Gibson anytime soon, but he gives them a credible second option in that season when there's lots of back-to-back games. So that's another bit of good news that Anaheim can count on their second-string goalie for some good outings. And speaking of good outings, Troy Terry just continues to churn and burn. 3 more goals to his ledger. I can't believe that he's available in the big league that I'm fantasy league that I'm playing in, but I'm going to change that. I'm going to claim in for him right after this show. Lundstrom with 3 goals, Lindholm with 2 goals, Raquel 2-1, and Trevor Zegras is finding his way and doing it with style. 5 assists last week, and he's a contender for big recognition this year, I think, in the rookie scoring. And Milano with 4 assists round out the guys that are making noise for the Ducks so far this season.
Well, look, with Arizona, like, let's just skip the on-ice product because we know it's not good. So I'm going to bring up something else that I saw today in regards to Arizona, and that's reportedly there's a report from Forbes indicating that the team is once again for sale, but with the target of moving the organization to Houston, which I thought was very interesting to see. Obviously, the team came out immediately, you know, full force denied all of these reports. But we had talked previously, Paul, about the potential for a team up in Quebec City. I think Houston, maybe on the grand scale, is a larger market. But in terms of teams that could potentially move, I do think the only one that would really be in the mix, unless somebody's finances have taken a real hit over the last 2 years, is Arizona. And I just don't see the team going through an expansion beyond 32. Honestly, it feels too much to go beyond that. So if the NHL does want to get into Houston, it almost has to be Arizona, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's a shame that we're having to talk about Arizona's off-ice stuff as opposed to the on-ice program. They've got some production out of Phil Kessel this year that's going to make him a tradable commodity if people want to take a chance to upgrade their offense. He's a great piece there, and they'd be wise to try and find some way to get more futures in there as quickly as possible, but spend some money, darn it. That's the issue. And really it's looking like a poor cousin in the NHL. And to your point, maybe the best thing that happens is they get relocated unless they can figure something out in their current location. The Boston Bruins, familiar names dot the landscape in terms of scoring leadership. It's that production line, perfection line that's scoring all the points, but there's some feathers being ruffled down below in the roster, and so it's more off-ice concerns when we talk here. Jake DeBrusk is a guy who a couple of years ago, AJ, he got 27 goals, followed it up with 19, but now he sees his path to top 6 scoring blocked by even second-line winger Taylor Hall, so he's not going to get a scoring opportunity in the top 6 anytime soon here. So he's gone ahead and requested a trade from the club. And I think they're going to try and execute it, but I think it's going to be tougher than they realize. It's not going to happen right away. They might just let him sit for a while and stew. And I wonder if they're going to get top value for him. But I'm sure at the end of the day, they're going to try and find somebody. They're going to look for a piece that can help them this year. They need to bolster the attack, get some depth scoring. So they're going to try and find whoever they can that can fit the bill. But DeBrusk looks like he's lit the fuse on something that's going to take him out of the Boston mix. And it's a shame because I think the guy's a talented forward and just found himself in a tough situation over there right now.
If there's one guy that's happy that, you know, Marchand is suspended, it's got to be DeBrusk, because they were, to your point, Paul, I think they were ready to just let him, you know, sit and stew for a little while. But then, you know, Anton Bildung gets thank you. And then Brad Marchand gets suspended and they don't have a choice but to put DeBrusk in the lineup. So it is interesting to see how that, unfortunately, for the team brass has changed there. In Buffalo, a 1-1-1 week. I think the headline here is twofold. It's Jeff Skinner finding some goals over the last week, 3 goals plus 2 assists. Two of those 5 points coming on the man advantage there. And he's on pace right now for a 30 goal season. I mean, I think his contract is probably just too long, honestly, for this to garner any interest outside of it. But as far as, you know, Buffalo is concerned, it's certainly a good sign to have a guy who's making $9 million a year to be producing offensively. It's, you know, what they've been hoping for. They didn't get last season. So kind of good news there. And then also it looks like they will get back Casey Mittelstadt tonight in a, you know, for the first time since the season opener when he gets hurt. We've got him penciled in for a third-line spot with Gergensen and Asplund, but I would expect him to really push for more. And honestly, you know, as he gets up to speed, I would like to see Mittelstadt playing with Skinner and Olofsson in that top line. And that's not a knock on Tage Thompson necessarily. He's having a really good year with, you know, 16 points in 22 games. But Casey Mittelstadt, I think, is the – you know, better, more, you know, long-term prospect here. And it is a natural center. Let's not forget, Tage Thompson came into the league as a winger as well.
In Carolina, they had their first losing week of the season, partner. And surprising that Gasperi Kapkaniemi is the big name among the scorers this past week, because for the first 5 weeks, we didn't hear too much of him. And we kind of got the prevailing sentiment that this could be a one and done in Carolina for him, because he signed the big contract. It was a shot across the bow of the Canadians again, and they didn't match the offer sheet that came his way. And so Carolina's experimented with him, and it really hasn't worked out. He's still listed as a bottom six forward here. They're going to try him at center to see if they can get more traction out of him going forward. But there's another guy that's also raised a bit of a concern for me, and that's Toivo Teravainen. A couple of years ago, he was entrenched as a top six winger, playing alongside Sebastian Aho. They had a really nice relationship in terms of the chemistry that they had on the ice. But Aho's just continued to rise and become the real leader offensively with this club. And Teravainen instead now finds himself in a bottom six situation and hasn't scored a goal in the last 5 games. So I'm curious to see what kind of future he has in Carolina, and if he can turn it around and get back to a top six role. And in the Nets, Freddie Anderson slumping a little bit of late. He has given up 8 goals in over three losses, and only 62 shots in those 3 games in total. So the save percentage is not very good either. So Freddie's in a bit of a slump. I've seen this before, and hopefully for Carolina, he snaps out of it, because he's the guy that they brought in for big bucks to see if they could take the next step in the NHL playoffs.
For the Flames, a 1-1 week, not a ton of offense in these 2 games. You've got, you know, 2 goals against Winnipeg on Saturday, then 2 goals against Pittsburgh on Monday here. So really a pretty slow offensive week from that standpoint. But, you know, they are continuing to lead the NHL in goals allowed per game at 1.95. They limited Pittsburgh to just 1 goal. Chicago the week before, 2, Boston 0, the Islanders 2, Buffalo 0. I mean, really, that game against Winnipeg when they gave up 4 is kind of the outlier for how good this team has been defensively. And so from a fantasy standpoint, like, maybe shy away from some of these guys a little bit, just because they're not relying heavily on the offense here. You still have Johnny Gaudreau getting 2 helpers in those 2 games, but I just don't expect it to be a team that's going to go out and they're going to win, you know, 4, 5, 6 goal games that often. I'm expecting more low scoring just because they have been so defensively solid.
Yeah, and you can credit Dan Blatter as well as their top guy, Markstrom, and the Nets. Both of them have been really good. So the net mining has really catapulted this team to the next level in the NHL, and they're one of the top teams in the first quarter. And Chicago's trying to get some traction too, and they're leaning on one of your favorites, Marc-Andre Fleury. We talked about him earlier in our DraftKings hit today when I pointed out over his last 6 games, 9 goals against. So the Flowers at the top of his game, they only went 1-1 in 2 games over the past 7 days, but it looks like he's got his game together, and that's great news for Chicago. But it's also worth pointing out that Brandon Hagel is a guy that fits my sidekick theory. He's playing with Kane and Taves on that top line, and he's making good on that with 3 goals in his last 4 games, a guy that we didn't forecast to be in the top 6 at the beginning of the year, but lo and behold, he's making the best of a really good opportunity. And it might be at the expense of Dylan Strome, a guy that I've had a lot of time for. I watched this guy as a junior, AJ, and he was mentioned in the same breath as Mitch Marner back in the day. And they were only 1 pick apart in the draft when they were entry draft came due. So that's the profile that he has had as a junior, but it really hasn't materialized in the pros. And he's been bounced around from left wing to center to right wing. Now he's got a role, and a good role for him. He winds up on the right wing on the second line, but I wonder, he's coming off a couple of DNPs, that's did not plays. So he's been in the press box for a couple of games, and you wonder if they're going to get a more motivated version, somebody who can reach the potential that I've long waited for in Chicago from him.
In Columbus, we got to talk about the goalie situation that's been unfolding today in terms of who they're going to get between the pipes tonight. So first reports came out from the team that they called up Daniil Tarasov from the minors, and he was going to start because both Merzlikins and Korpisalo were ill. They did classify it as non-COVID illness. Now it seems Merzlikins might still be available. So that tone has changed a little bit. Korpisalo definitely won't play. So a very up-in-the-air goaltending situation in Columbus tonight. If you were thinking about maybe using one of them, I personally would shy away from it just because it is so uncertain, or be ready to make a, you know, kind of a last minute change. We probably at this point won't know who's starting for them until they come onto the ice for warmups. Outside of the goaltending situation, this last week saw Adam Boqvist really lead the way for them with 3 goals and 1 assist. And then I think we should talk about Jacob Voracek for a minute here. He had 2 assists this last week. On the year, he's sitting 13th overall in total assists with 17 in 20 games. And really, this was a move that kind of flew under the radar in a lot of ways when they brought him in here. And I just think, you know, you have to tip your hat to them for picking up a guy like Voracek. Really, you know, they gave up Cam Atkinson, who, I don't know, Cam Atkinson hasn't been that, you know, hasn't been great this year for the Flyers. So I really think that this one, as we've watched it, you know, Atkinson 12 points in 21 games, but I think Voracek's having the better year. And so for my money, I think Columbus is currently winning this trade.
Yeah, I would agree. Cam Atkinson stormed out of the gate, if you'll recall. He had 6 goals in the first 9 games, something like that, but really gone quiet since then. But Voracek has been central to that offense and doing what he's done in his first part of his career when he was with Philadelphia. And he used to be a great setup guy, one of the better playmaking wingers. And I like those guys. I like his profile. And I think he's well-suited to a top 6 role, which was not afforded to him always in the last couple of years in Philly. So he's becoming the best version of himself once again. I'm happy to see it. In Colorado, they went 1-2 last week, but they're pretty excited about the fact that Nate MacKinnon has returned to the lineup. His debut back with the club was last night, and they got stormed by the Maple Leafs in an 8-3 drubbing. But MacKinnon looked good, AJ. His shot delivery was what we're used to seeing. His skating was up to par. So I think he's hitting the ice running, and they have some structure back to their top 6 that's familiar with what we forecast at the beginning of the season. The wild card there, though, has been Valeri Nichushkin, and he's fit in like a glove on that second scoring line. since he broke into this league, AJ, I was thinking this guy has the size, apparently the skill to be a dominant force here. But he bounced around, and we both were scratching our heads for a couple of seasons wondering, why can't this guy put it all together? But it seems like he is right now, and that really has solidified the top six alongside the aforementioned Nazem Kadri, who's having a career year for them too. And beyond that, Cale Makar is making a mockery of the Norris Trophy race. I think that he's got it locked up already, partner. I don't know if you feel differently, but I don't know if anybody who's going to challenge him the way he's scoring right now and dominating play when he's on the ice. Even though they did get beat in a lopsided score, he looked very dangerous again last night.
Well, Paul, I certainly agree with you on Makar here, but I do think let's not totally sleep on Adam Fox, who's certainly in the mix here as well. But, you know, there's Makar, I would say, is, I agree, he's probably leading the way right now. If you ask voters to vote right now, I would expect he would win. But Adam Fox isn't going to go quietly into the night here. In Dallas, 3-0 last week, a 5-game winning streak over that stretch. And I think it's, you know, we should look at the teams that they beat during this 5-game winning streak. You're talking about the Blues, Edmonton, who's been really good this year, Colorado, obviously, Arizona, and then Carolina. So they've beaten, you know, three really good teams over this 5-game stretch. They'll get Columbus tonight, which you would expect based on their recent performance that they should, you know, trounce them. And it's not just one guy that's carrying the load for them. In those three games, they've gotten two wins out of Braden Holtby with a 9.58 save percentage. They got one win from Jake Ottinger, 9.70 save percentage. It's going to be Ottinger who goes tonight. And I think it was interesting to hear, you don't hear a lot of talk about matchups with goalies in today's NHL, about how they match up against teams in a lot of ways. At least I don't feel like I do. But they talked about the fact that they played Holtby against Carolina because he could move the puck better, and that would counteract one of Carolina's strengths, which is the forecheck there. So it was interesting to see, to hear a team talk about switching a goaltender because of that. Outside of the Nets, look, what a week for Joe Pavelski. 7 points in those three games. Rube Hintz had 4 goals in that stretch. And it's interesting to note none of those points for either of those guys came on the power play. So they've been having to score 5-on-5 and finding a way to rack up wins.
Yeah, and that line quietly has become one of the more dominant ones in the NHL when you consider Jason Robertson having a fine year. Rube Hintz, 7 goals and 2 helpers in his last 5 games. So right now, the top line in Dallas doesn't feature the names that we're used to seeing in Sagan and Radulov and Jamie Benn. They're depth scorers now on a team that is riding the highs of that trio that you mentioned. The Detroit Red Wings come into this week on a 4-game winning streak. Alex Nedeljkovic receded for 2 of the wins last week with a total of 3 goals against Lucas Raymond. I'll make the case here, and I wonder if you have a differing view. I think he's way ahead of the pack in terms of potential for Calder Trophy recognition, and maybe has a couple of competitors that we've talked about, one already, and we'll get to one with the Leafs, oddly enough, that we'll talk about later. So that's a bit of a horse race, and right now, Raymond is a bit of a surprise that came out of the blocks quicker than we thought at the beginning of the season. Moritz Seider is a guy who's still piling up some points on the back end with 3 assists. Dylan Larkin, this guy reminds me an awful lot of a young Steve Yzerman, AJ, and that's high praise, I know, but Yzerman took a couple of seasons to really find his way as a leader here, and I think Larkin is following that same trend, and he's got Yzerman up in the press box, maybe showing him a lot of things about leadership, and I'm seeing a lot of that translate to what he's doing on the ice, and getting some support and scoring from Nemesnikov. This guy's been piling up the points early this season too, so depth scoring happening in Detroit, and they're a tougher out than a lot of teams figured because they also have some pretty good goaltending.
Well, Paul, you kind of mentioned that Lucas Raymond came out of nowhere, and could that be more evident than the fact that Team Sweden has requested an exemption from the IIHF after they left Lucas Raymond off their 55-man Olympic long list. So you're talking about 55 guys that they felt were better suited for their Olympic squad than Lucas Raymond. And now they're certainly backpedaling after the start he's had to this year and trying to get him available for their roster after not being on that initial list. In Edmonton, look, sound the alarms. Everything is falling apart here. Leon Draisaitl just one assist in their last two games. Really a tough week for him. Obviously, I am kidding here. They are on a three-game win streak. Koskinen has been phenomenal. Two wins over that stretch with just four goals allowed. They've gotten three goals out of Zach Hyman. And, of course, Connor McDavid continuing to produce 4 points in his last two games. I do think it's interesting that in those two games, they haven't gotten any power play production, which is a bit strange for a team that has from basically the onset of the year and still continues to lead the league in power play percentage. They're still sitting at 35.9, which is, you know, almost, it actually is more than 6 percentage points clear of the next closest team. But obviously they are having a few struggles. Maybe other teams in the NHL are figuring them out, but I don't think it really matters when you have the kind of talent that they can put on the ice.
AJ, I'm not even a third of the way through all the teams we're talking about, or maybe just there, but now we'll talk about Florida, but this is the third team among the leaders in the league that stumbled last week. They too went 1-2. The news off the ice is where I'll start. When we talk about their team leadership and their captain, Alexander Barkov, he's still about a week or two away from rejoining the club, but he did resume skating. And so that's a positive development. But on the downside, Anthony Duclair is listed as day-to-day with a lower body injury. This guy's provided some pretty good consistent scoring out of the block so far this year. And they're getting some outstanding work from Sergei Bobrovsky, a guy that I've panned a lot since he signed for the Big Bucks over in Florida. But he's delivering the goods. He's 10-1 with a .218 goals against average. Meanwhile, Spencer Knight, we talk about the rookie race. He's not a part of it so far. His goals against average is north of 3. He's definitely a second stringer here and only been a part of 8 decisions so far for this powerhouse club. They're getting a lot of scoring despite the fact Barkov is out of the lineup. His normal running mate, Jonathan Huberdeau, has really stepped up and got 4 points last week. But Aaron Ekblad is the guy I want to land on for a bit, AJ. When you think about, I've discussed potential trophies awarded early at the quarter mark. This guy's in line also for some discussion in the Norris race because of the outstanding scoring that he's been doing and also playing being a tower of power on the blue line for them. So, and add another name to a very competitive Norris race, and it should be interesting to see which one emerges. There's a lot of good rear guards in this league right now, and Ekblad's another one.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. And another defenseman that we can talk about here is Drew Doughty. Came back from an extended injury absence to play earlier this week against Anaheim. Logged 27:55 of ice time. So they clearly didn't ease him back into this one. Picked up an assist, and that's good news for a team that's just 1-3-3 in their last 7 games. To get a player of his caliber back will certainly help them kind of bolster that blue line. Obviously, the other news, Brendan Lemieux suspended 5 games for the biting incident on Brady Tkachuk, which, you know, he can't be the first player in this league that has wanted to bite a Tkachuk over the course of NHL history.
Yeah, that's for sure. The guy in Calgary is probably turned some heads, and their father was a bit of a piece of work too. One of the toughest guys though in the NHL that I ever saw. In Minnesota, this is a team that's got it all going on right now, and an offense that has really grown in the last couple of seasons is really flourishing at the moment. 4 straight wins on their record, and Cam Talbot's been outstanding in the Nets. 2 more wins last week and a total of 3 goals against in his 2 starts. Marcus Foligno leading the scoring parade with 2 goals and a helper is having a bit of a breakout campaign. Matt Zuccarello staying healthy, which is a good sign and a rarity for him. Now that he's back in the lineup, he looks good again and 2 goals to his ledger. Hartman with 2 goals and 2 helpers, bit of a surprise contributor, but steady all season long. So he's one guy that's come out as a bit of a sleeper pick that has turned out well so far. But the guy that stirs the drink right now is Kirill Kaprizov. strong sophomore season, buoyed by 7 more points last week, and his scoring partner, Kevin Fiala, chipping in with 3 assists as well. So all kinds of offense coming from this team, and everybody's just getting the score sheet for Minnesota these days.
Montreal, it's a mixed bag in terms of the additions and subtractions to the lineup here. We'll start with the good news first. For Habs fans, Chris Weidman, Brett Kulak, and Matthew Perreault will all be back in the lineup tonight. That will obviously bolster their defense that has been a little bit weaker. Obviously, Perreault, for his part, adds some bottom six depth and is a bit of a power play specialist for them. On the bad news side of it, both Brendan Gallagher and Sammy Nicoux are in the COVID protocol, so they'll be without them. In terms of Gallagher, I think the player to look at is Jake Evans, who's in line to move over to the wing and play along Arturi Lehkonen and Nick Suzuki in a second-line role. So, like I said, a bit of good news, bit of bad news. As far as the offense goes, it's been mostly that first line. Tyler Toffoli, a goal and 2 assists. Christian Dvorak, same. And then Josh Anderson, 3 goals and 1 assist in their last 3 games. So really have become very top-line heavy, and losing a player like Brendan Gallagher certainly isn't going to help that at all.
AJ, in New Jersey, I've got something that really surprised me. I want to get your reaction. Jack Hughes, formerly a top draft pick in this league, he's had issues with staying healthy and scoring at a pace that I don't think measures up with the contract that he signed last week. 8 years at $8 million a season. That seems a little bit high for me. What do you think about that kind of a deal for a guy who's in his third season? And really, I think this was a bit of a reach, if you ask me.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think the money, the total dollars is a little bit on the high side here. You know, part of it is the, you know, COVID, like from when he came into the league, we haven't really seen him in a full 82 game season, a normal schedule. But I do agree. I think this early, $8 million does seem a little bit high. Of course, if he has, you know, 2 or 3 good years here, you know, they're going to be loving the fact that he signed to $8 million. From a player side of it, you got to love the fact that you just cashed in for $64 million on an 8-year deal, and you're only going to be 29 when it runs out. Like, 29 is prime for signing another big 6-7-year contract, especially if his career projects the way it's supposed to after being a first round pick. So for that side, for the player side of it, this is a fantastic deal.
Yeah, I think he's got to be thrilled, but I'm scratching my head because they've got 3 centers now that have skill, and they're having to put one on the wing. And oddly enough, right now it's Jack Hughes that getting the wing positions alongside Nico Hischier, because Dawson Mercer has been scoring up a storm. He was a guy that wasn't projected to be a scoring line pivot this early on in his development, but he's had a strong start to his career, and he's right in there in the second line right now. And that second line is flourishing, because Andreas Johnsson is on a heater himself, and he's scoring like he did in the Calder Cup chase for the Toronto Marlies a couple of years ago. I haven't seen this kind of production of him in the early years as a pro. He was a bit streaky with the Leafs, but never really afforded a top 6 opportunity. So he's making good on the chance now, and I don't think there's any turning back for him. So some good news there, but a real head-scratcher among the contracts that are being handed out. Also in the Nets, they have to be happy in New Jersey that's looking solidified, as both Mackenzie Blackwood and Jonathan Bernier have goals against under 3, and that's a credit to them more than the defensive structure here, I'll say. Those are 2 talented goalies.
Look, Paul, I don't know about you, but I feel like the Predators are just quietly sliding under the radar. I think some of it has to do with, like, I'm not noticing them because they're not showing up on injury lists. They're pretty much healthy. Hopefully I didn't just jinx their entire team to, you know, come down with something. But, you know, so and they're not, like, none of their players are at the top of production list, but they're certainly not bad. But they're sitting 3rd in the Central Division right now. They're 7-4 at home, which has historically been, you know, Bridgestone Arena there has been historically very hard to play in, and that's exactly what they want here. So, you know, right now this is a playoff team getting good production. Philip Forsberg, 4 goals, 2 assists. Mikael Granlund, 1 goal, 5 assists in their last 3 games. Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson, both with 4 points over that stretch as well. So it's like all the guys that they want to produce are producing. The goaltending has been solid, led by UC Saros this season. He has 2 wins and 2 goals allowed in their last 3 games. I just, it feels like they're having a really good year, but they're not being talked about that much, at least not in, the circles that I'm seeing.
Yeah, and it's funny because I mentioned on today's hit with DraftKings again that Michael Granlund was a guy that was almost on the outs, and the Maple Leafs were inquiring about his availability before the season started to see if they could pry him loose here. And it's probably a good thing Nashville did hold on in, because along with him, they got a couple other guys that are on pace for their best seasons in Nashville colors, and that's Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene, who continue to score regularly for this club. Each of them got 4 points last week, and Granlund got 6. So offense, not an issue here for a team that we normally speak of highly in terms of a strong defensive structure. But they're pairing both together right now, and it's no wonder they're a winning team thus far this season. The same can't be said for the New York Islanders. At the beginning of the year, I believe I picked this team first in the division, AJ, and I really don't think that's happening. They're on an 8-game losing streak, and much of the blame for that is just simply because I don't think any team in the league can survive the loss of their top 4 defensemen to injury and or COVID. The good news here is that Adam Pavlik and Andy Green are out of the COVID protocol, and along with Andrew Svead and Ross Johnson are headed back into the lineup, unless you have more information than me. That's the best news out of the island, and they really need some good news, because it's been almost time to really panic with the way things have unfolded in the last month for them.
Yeah, in terms of those guys coming back, it does look like Anders Lee, Josh Bailey, Adam Pelich, and Andy Green will all be in action. Obviously, they're still without Brock Nelson. That wasn't COVID-related. Zdeno Chara, Casey Cizikas are still out. Kiefer Bellows as well. So pretty banged-up squad that's going to play some games for the first time in a little bit over a week. And, Paul, I went to the tape here and took a look. We both had the Islanders finishing second in the Metro here. So, not looking good there. We were also both on the Hurricanes, the Hurricanes to win. I feel a little bit better about that one than the other one there. So, all things considered, the Islanders, it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back from this. Sticking with New York, we'll take a look at the Rangers, who are coming off another good week for them. This team, again, has been playing really well of late, primarily on the back of Igor Shesterkin. They're on a 4-game winning streak. He got 2 wins, just 3 goals allowed in this past week here. All 4 of those wins are his. He's started 6 straight games for them, is going to go again tomorrow by all accounts, it looks like. They'll obviously give the second game. They're heading into a back-to-back. But defensively, he has just been fantastic this year. 12 wins in 17 games played. And his name, if you go head over to our friends at DraftKings, the DraftKings Sportsbook here, look at Vezina Trophy odds. You'll see Shesterkin is second now behind Vasilevskiy. So might be a good time to jump on that. Maybe take a run at that. In terms of the offense, it's a lot of the same names that we're used to that have been producing. Trouba with 2 goals, Panarin 4 points, Hunt 3 points, Fox with a trio of assists. Like I said, he's not going to simply let somebody take that Norris Trophy away from him.
Yeah, Jacob Trouba is the name that leaps off the page among the ones that you mentioned, because it was a few years ago when he was with New York. AJ, in his previous stop in Winnipeg, I keep getting that mixed up, but he was with Winnipeg early in his career, and he showed an offensive upside that all but disappeared when he started with the Rangers, and it's good to see him reviving that in the last several weeks, and I think he's a strong pickup in season-long pools if you have the chance. In Ottawa, they're looking to change their fortune somehow, some way. Again, a team that's been hammered by injuries and COVID issues. They're 1-11-1 in their last 13 outings, and their goaltending situation really took a nosedive with the news that Matt Murray was waived from their roster. And so now the goaltending is in the hands of Filip Gustavsson and Anton Forsberg. And oops, they both dropped the ball here. They've been atrocious in my analysis, AJ. And so there's really trouble inside the Ottawa blue line. They are hopeful that the return of Drake Batherson will solidify things among their top scoring unit. And Norris and Brown are guys that are central figures to the depth of the second line. And so they each chimed in for a couple of points. But this team needs to have some good things fall their way. And it has to begin with finding somebody who can stop pucks regularly, I think.
Well, in Philadelphia, another just brutal week for them. They went 0-3. They're winless in their last seven. The one, you know, one of the few guys contributing offense right now, Joel Farabee, who's got two goals in this last three games here, picked up an injury after just logging 256 of ice time last night. And now they're dealing with that. They've got Derek Brassard is still out of the lineup. Ryan Ellis has been out for a while. And really, they are just struggling to find anybody that can offer much in the way of offense right now. Carter Hart is looking not great. 0-2 last week. 857 is the save percentage. That number was bested only slightly by Marty Jones in his one appearance. 882 save percentage. So bad goaltending, no offense. It's not a surprise that the Flyers are winless in their last seven.
Yeah, and add to that, there's rumors about their longtime leader, Claude Giroux, maybe dangled as trade bait if this team doesn't right its ship. And there's also been some talk that he insiders who are close to him think that he might like to come to the Canadian nation's capital to wind up his career. That'd be a big find for the Senators and really helpful to their leadership core. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. Just speculation that came across my newswire this past week. I'm also happy for Morgan Frost. The youngster was a first-round draft pick a couple of years ago, had some injuries that have really slowed his development, but he had 2 points last week, and he finds himself on the second line here on the left side. Good spot for him in a scoring line situation. Philly hope makes the most of it. At this point, AJ, we take a break. We'll be back to take our look at the remaining teams, beginning with your favorite club. Listeners are tuned in to Statsman and AJ on Puckcast, RotoWire's signature hockey pod. We'll be back right after this.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster.
Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, we're back, but let's have another word from our main sponsor now, Owner's Box. Over to you, AJ.
Are you looking for a new way to play fantasy sports? Owner's Box offers two game types, tournament salary cap, and head-to-head live drafts. All new players receive a $25 bonus when they deposit $10 or more on the platform. Be sure to check out Owner's Box's new Super Flex salary cap game, a revolutionary new way to play fantasy football that brings a strategic alternative to the traditional season-long formats in daily fantasy contests. The Superflex salary cap format, available only on Owner's Box, removes the kicker and defensive position slots and focuses only on offensive players. Users will build their 9-player lineup while staying under the $50,000 salary cap. Large prize pools will be available throughout the season. The Superflex position gives the user the option to select an additional quarterback, running back, wide receiver, or tight end. Ultimately, it makes the quarterback a premium position versus other fantasy formats. And don't worry, listeners, Owner's Box also has NHL contests, including GPP tournaments, for their unique one-week fantasy format. Play the Owner's Box salary cap contest for free. Use promo code DREW9, that's DREW9, for a free $10 entry into the Sunday-only salary cap contest.
AJ, we are just past the quarter mark in the season, and we're giving out advice on today's show for some players that could be added in season-long format, could be helpful to your teams. We've got a form chart now. Some players that we didn't highlight at the beginning of the season have emerged, and others have kind of rehabilitated their image. I cite Trouba as an example that I brought up earlier. To find out more about those people and players, and if you're considering them, we encourage you to reach out to us. Send your comments or questions. If you want to talk about fantasy hockey with us, you can reach out to me on Twitter at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchulz24. We'll be happy to share our thoughts with you on these and any other questions you have in your upcoming pods that you tune in on a regular basis. You get more tidbits during the show, but reach out to us during the week. We're happy to get back to you. AJ, I'm going to give you the floor when it comes to the Pittsburgh Penguins. I just want to say that north of the border, we have seen Tristan Jarry. He's white hot right now, and he's getting strong consideration to be a participant in Team Canada's goaltending mix, which is up for grabs. And I want to know what you think about what he's doing right now. And also the return of your captain is big news in Pittsburgh.
Well, Paul, before we dive into that, I was watching the game broadcast last night, and they're asking people in the arena in Edmonton who should be the Team Canada captain this year. Whether it should be Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid. Now, what I saw on that broadcast, all of the Penguins fans obviously said Crosby, but I thought it was more telling that about half of the Ottawa or Edmonton fans, rather, that they asked, still said Crosby. So what would be your take on that, Paul? Who should captain Team Canada?
I think it's got to be Sidney Crosby, AJ. The guy has a resume, not just for regular season, strong efforts in the regular season, but he's done on the chips that mattered the most on the biggest stage for Canada and also with the Cup wins in Pittsburgh. McDavid is a little bit shy in those latter areas. He hasn't had the international exposure, first of all, except for his junior career, and he certainly hasn't enjoyed the playoff success for Sidney Crosby. And so I think that's the tiebreaker for me. And, it's almost a little premature to make the handoff when I still think there's a lot of miles left in Sid the Kid.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I agree with you, but not being Canadian, I don't have a say in that that debate. I will lead us into the Penguins then. And kind of the biggest news is Brian Rust back on IR, deemed week to week with a lower body injury. That's a huge blow for a guy that already missed an extended chunk of time, most of October, with an injury. So obviously Pittsburgh will have to make do. And it's been Evan Rodriguez who stepped in to that spot in the top line. And you look last six games, he's got 5 points, and goes to show what you like to call the sidekick theory, Paul. Evan Rodriguez playing with Sidney Crosby and Jake Guentzel, suddenly very productive, and really not much of a surprise there. And obviously, you know, you mentioned Tristan Jarry, even with the game last night against Edmonton that didn't go our way, which, you know, there's a lot of teams that lose games to Edmonton and goaltenders that get beat up by them. He still posted a .936 save percentage and 1.63 goals against average in his last three games. That one real bad outing that they had was by Casey DeSmith, but even he only gave up 3 goals. That sixth spot is a little misleading because of those empty netters. I'll dive right in to Seattle then for us as well here, Paul. You look 2-1-1 last week. I think the biggest news that really, honestly, came out of nowhere, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners know, but basically as part of the RotoWire breaking news crew, our job is to kind of dig up all the latest news and be watching for that. And the fact that Chris Driezer suddenly yesterday popped up on injured reserve really came out of nowhere. There was no indication anywhere that I could find, at least, that he had been hurt or when he had been hurt. So, you know, 2 wins, just 5 goals allowed over the last week, had a really solid week. But now they're going to have to use Philip Grubauer at least for the next couple of games here now that he's on IR. They've also got injuries to Jordan Eberle, Jaden Schwartz, Kelly Yarncroc is on IR as well. Like, things starting to kind of pile up for Seattle here. And unfortunately, that comes when they seem to be doing well. You know, 2-1-1 in the last week. Donato had 3 goals. Eberle had 2. McCann 2. Appleton 2. Like, they're starting to find offense. They were getting solid net mining. But then have, you know, it's not just depth guys that are hurt for them here, right? Like, Eberle, Schwartz, Driezer, technically maybe the backup goalie, but more the 1B, in my opinion. So some big losses here that they're trying to scramble and deal with.
I agree with you. And I mean, I kind of gave us a bad grade for missing on a couple of guys that had breakout seasons we didn't anticipate. But I think we nailed our analysis with Seattle and the top guys that would emerge here. We had Donato on that list. We had Eberle, McCann, Gourde, Donskoy. They've all been consistent scorers for this club, and they've rose to the occasion last week. They're going to be challenged, like you said, going forward with the issues that they currently have in the infirmary. In San Jose, it's been a positive turn of events for them of late. 2-1 was the record last week, and the goaltending has been solid. James Reimer, 2-1 on the week with 6 goals against and 1 shutout as well. He's kind of wrested control of the crease from all comers, and I expect him to continue with that run going forward. And up front, Timo Meier's had an outstanding season, and he continued with 4 goals last week. But Logan Couture is a guy who's quietly continued to go about what he does every year, and that's be a point-a-game guy. And I still find that he's not fully owned in a lot of leagues that are out there, so I would grab the opportunity to pick him up as soon as possible if you're in season-long play, if he's available. A center like him playing number one minutes at this stage of the season going unclaimed is a luxury for anybody who can scoop him up at the moment. So that's a bit of a season-long cool tip. And Erik Karlsson's a guy that a lot of people soured on, AJ, because he's not the 70-point defenseman anymore. But what caught my eye is that he's a +4 so far this season after a couple of seasons where he was a big minus. So if plus-minus factors in and you're looking for offense from the back end, you could do a lot worse than a guy who's looking better than he has in the last couple of seasons in San Jose.
Well, there's really only one thing to talk about today when it comes to the St. Louis Blues, and that is the fact that Jordan Binnington was placed on the COVID protocols after testing positive, which means at a minimum he's going to miss the next 10 days, which is 4 games for them. And that's only if he has no symptoms. If he develops any symptoms, it could be longer. At least That's as far as I understand how the protocols work in the NHL, which is, you know, a bit of a trick to figure out. So they're going to need Ville Husso to really step up here. He's had a strong start to the year. He's 3-1-0 in four appearances, 1.76 goals against average, one shutout in there as well, but just hasn't played much. I mean, really underwhelming. So that's one to watch. Now, obviously, we would never cheer for injuries, but one interesting talking point to monitor here is because of their cap situation, they actually can't call up Charlie Lindgren until tomorrow, which means they're going to use as their backup netminder tonight Kyle Konen, who last played in 2019-20 for Grand Valley State University.
Wow.
So an E-Bug will be serving as the number two for the Blues tonight. So if something were to happen to Ville Husso, which, again, we're not hoping for, but something to monitor, that their next best option is a guy who's never really played above, you know, kind of the junior development college level of hockey.
I wonder if they're looking for David Ayers, who made his claim to fame by the Maple Leafs last year. I will wear that one for the rest of my life, I'm sure, as a Leaf fan, AJ. In Tampa, the defending champs went 1-1-1 last week, but Corey Perry has established himself there just as he did in Montreal, a key cog in their offense. He's getting a look on power play right now. They've had a couple of injury issues. Stephen Stamkos missed the game to welcome a second child to his family, so congratulations to him. And Perry took advantage of these opportunities to lead the attack with two goals and one assist. Taylor Radish chipped in with two assists, a name that's not on the tip of people's tongues when they talk about Tampa's situation. He's a filler right now until they get back at full strength. Anthony Cirelli with a goal and one helper. He's a guy that will move into the second line scoring situation because Braden Point lands on the IR and will miss a month due to his upper body injury. So Cirelli's been in the two slot before, but he's now going to be pressed into that two-way role more than the check-in assignment that he has had at times when he was a third-liner on this club. And Sergachev, their up-and-coming defenseman, they're grooming him slowly and carefully. He's getting third-line minutes, third-pairing minutes, but he's chipped in with 5 points in his last six games played after a bit of a suspect start. I was beginning to worry about him, but he showed the offensive side of his game once again, and I think he's still a reasonable choice if you're looking for offensive help. Again, Tampa's a solid squad, and he is well-insulated to get a lot of high-leverage minutes over in that circumstance.
Well, as I lead us into Toronto here, I'll just say, you know, two quick things to keep an eye on. Andre Kasha on IR, obviously, a bit of a depth concern there, but so far they've been able to manage that without any problem. Joseph Woll picked up an injury as well, which just means Michael Hutchinson will serve as the backup at least until Mrazek comes back. But again, Jack Campbell is the starter here. And then finally, I will let you know, our users know that you can leave the podcast now unless you're from Toronto. I would circle back in about 15 to 20 minutes when Paul's done, and we'll move on to Vancouver at that point.
Well, you know what? I'll try and be brief, but let me get the high points. A five-game win streak, AJ. It's the third time they got a five-game win streak on their ledger. They're 15-2 in their last seven games. Jack Campbell's a guy I'd be curious to know what the odds are on him at the Vezina Trophy race, because he's second to Jacob Markstrom in the goals against category right now. Picked up two more wins, allowing a total of four goals against last week. Austin Matthews is on a heater, and that's bad news for goalies everywhere. Five goals for him, and all of a sudden, he's in the top 10 NHL goal scorers again. And I think it won't be long before he's right up behind Alexander Ovechkin. The way Matthews is playing, I see some growth to his game, if you can imagine, that he's become more of a 200-foot player, and he's getting a lot of goals in close, as well as releasing that Howard Sora wrist shot. Leading the offense in total points last week, though, was John Tavares, and I don't hear anybody talking about, oh, the cap hit of $11 million for a guy that is getting longer in the tooth. He's still only 30, folks, and he's 4 years into this contract, and he's playing the best hockey that I've seen him play in a Toronto jersey. Speaking of players playing their best hockey in a Toronto jersey, the same goes for Alexander Kerfoot, a subject of a lot of trade rumors as well. He's fit in very well in the second line wing position. I think that's his home. He's got four more points there on top of a solid season to date. Even Wayne Simmonds, a fourth liner who has been second and third earlier in his career, loves it in Toronto, and he's got two goals and one helper to his resume. And on the back end, a defensive shutdown pairing combined for 4 points between them and Jake Muzzin and TJ Brody. I'm done, AJ. How did I do? Less than 15?
I think that came in under an hour, so it should be okay.
So Vancouver's next partner, and this is a team nobody's laughing in Van City. They went 2-2 last week, but the last two games are offering hope because they were the victories. They're 2-1. The 2-1 mark on the week went to Thatcher Demko, who is trying to hold down the fort with allowing a total of 6 goals against in those 3 outings. So you can't blame him for the troubles for the club over the last little while. He's been very good in the nets and facing a lot of rubber, and still the numbers are pretty decent. Tyler Mott, 2 goals. Tanner Pearson, 2 goals. Scott, Connor Garland is a guy that I have a lot of time for. He had been in a bit of a slump, AJ, but finding the mark with a couple of goals, a total of 4 points as well. Good news for them on the offensive side of the puck. And their Hughes, the brother of the Hughes in New Jersey, a defenseman here, he had 6 assists last week and rates as one of the top scoring blue liners as well. JT Miller has assumed a top line scoring situation and produced 4 points for them last week. And that's because he got the opportunity because Elias Pettersson has been relegated to third line minutes. That's the big news that I see here, AJ, in terms of roster updates. 13 minutes a game for a guy who should be their signature offensive piece. And he's not moving from that situation as long as Miller's performing like he is. And their captain, Bo Horvat, is holding out up his end of the bargain as well.
In Sin City, it's a bit of a rough week for them. 0-2. Robin Leonard's numbers, not great. A .873 save percentage, 4.14 goals against average. It would be really great if they had another netminder that they could use there. But of course, they didn't need one heading into the season. In terms of the offensive side, there's not, you know, there's some good news. Pacioretty, 3 points in those 2 games. Mark Stone, a pair of helpers. So they're getting production out of some of those guys. I think you'd be you got to be looking more from a guy like Dadonov, right? No points in those 2 games, and really a quiet, kind of quiet season for him overall. When you consider, his last couple of games, he's got just 1 assist in his last 7, and that's certainly not good enough, especially when you consider the number of players that have been out at points during the year. You would have expected a player like Dadonov to step up and maybe look like the guy who put up 65 points in 2017 or 70 points in 2018. I mean, at this point, you'd be happy with even the 47-point guy from his last year in Florida when he played just 69 games. Like, you need more out of a player like him. And obviously, they need better netminding from Robin Leonard as well.
Yeah, and I mean, they have to be thrilled that Stone and Pacioretty are back, but the happiest guy on the club has to be Chandler Stephenson, who is having a career-best season, despite the fact he's been without his regular line mates for much of the early part of the season. And I think he's available in a lot of fantasy leagues, too. I took a look this morning, and I scooped him up on my roster, AJ, because he's got almost a point a game, and I think it's only going to go higher from here with the return of the 2 leaders of this offense. For my money, though, I think Washington is still a team that still rates among the top clubs in the league. They got 2 wins and a loss last week. Samsonov and the Nets for all 3 of those games, giving up a rather high 10 goals against. He's now started 6 of the last 7, so they're kind of giving him a run in the Nets that Vitek Vanacek had performed admirably in the early going, but they want to see what they have in this youngster who is deemed the goalie of the future. And I guess they've determined that the future is now. They want to see what they have, and he's delivering the goods for the most part. And speaking of delivering the goods, Alexander Ovechkin, 4 more goals. He's 4 more closer to Wayne Gretzky, and a lot more people are talking about the topic that we raised last season, that all-time goals against record is really in jeopardy. And I think it's going to be a lot more excitement around this club over the next 5 years that Ovechkin is signed there. I think it's only a matter of time before that number falls, and that'll be a big celebration around the league, I do think. Tom Wilson, the league's unique player, the unicorn, a lot of people call him. He had 6 points last week, too, so out producing the great eight. He's now moved to the right wing on the second line, AJ, so spreading the roster out. And I think in large part they're able to do that because young Alexi Protas has been given the role in the right wing on the top line. And you talk about the ultimate sidekick opportunity right across the ice from Alexander Ovechkin, another Alexi. And he is scored 3 points last week. So I wonder how long he holds on to the role. I guess as long as he keeps scoring, but a real nice addition to the top six here, as if they needed that kind of help. They're looking to get healthy, and TJ Oshie is still a ways away from that. So a nice plug and play with Protas right now. And on the back end, Dmitry Orlov, speaking of guys that are on career best paces, he's now offering this club another offensive look from the back end in addition to John Carlson. He's on a career best pace, AJ, with 14 points in the 23 games played so far this season.
Finally, we'll round it out with the Winnipeg Jets here. And you get the fact that they went 1-5-1 in the last seven games. My immediate reaction is going to be to look at the netminding, right? Like they have a pretty talented group of guys at the forwards, maybe Hellebuck struggling or something, and really not. I mean, yes, we've come to expect, you know, really high things from Connor Hellebuck, but a 9.26 save percentage over that stretch with a 2.2 goals against average. He played in six of those seven games. Obviously, you know, Eric Comrie, whatever, his numbers weren't great in his one game, but that's not what we're worried about here in terms of long-term success. So then obviously the only explanation is really the lack of offense that we're getting from them. And again, you look over these last, you know, last six games here for them, or last seven games rather, there's a lot of guys that, you know, you should probably be concerned about. Blake Wheeler, two helpers over that stretch. Neil Pionk, who's kind of supposed to be their top offensive producer, also two assists. Now, they've only had Paul Stastny back for three of those games, so I'll give him a little bit of a pass. But even, you know, Kyle Connor, 4 points in seven games. Okay, that's certainly a decent production out of him. But you also have to look at the fact that they've got one power play goal over those last seven games. So another kind of big concern for this team, you know, in terms of getting production. And there's only so much that Connor Hellebuck can do. If he's not going to get any offense, he's not going to be able to rack up wins, which is unfortunate for fantasy owners out there because, you know, obviously you want a guy that's playing every night. He falls into that category. You want a guy that's, you know, got a good pedigree, has racked up wins in the past. And again, that applies to him. But if he's not getting any offense, there's only so much that he can do.
And that's the news and notes from around the league, all 32 clubs with changes. And we mentioned a lot of clubs streaking in different directions. And the infirmary has been busy with COVID and other injuries cropping up. We're doing our best to keep you updated. And we think it's critical that you listen into this show to get the best advice in that regard. But we also turn our attention to DFS play, where AJ and I put together our best lineups in FanDuel and DraftKings environments. I've done the FanDuel one, and AJ will give us the DraftKings one before I reveal my choices. So go ahead, partner. What have you got for us in store tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I dive into that, I would encourage any of our listeners out there who are playing on DraftKings to go check us out on DraftKings YouTube show. It's on every day at, let me do the math right here, 11 o'clock Eastern. You can check us out on there. Or if you don't happen to catch it then, the show is usually shared on their YouTube channel, or you can always find it through social media as well as another avenue. So go check it out, and that'll give you some more insight on what we're doing, at least for the DraftKings portion of this. And really, you can try and carry some of that over into FanDuel as well. The players might work. The salaries obviously won't. But in terms of what I did here, I started out with two lower-priced centers tonight. But really, that's because I want to do a big, big stack here. So I'll start with the guys that I'm not stacking, my kind of outliers. And that starts with Nico Hischier. You mentioned, you know, that they moved Jack Hughes to the wing, which I actually think – long-term, it's maybe not the best choice. You would like some depth. But in terms of short-term production, I think it could really work out between him and Hischier on the same line. You've got Heischer on a 9-game goal drought, but he's got 6 helpers over that stretch. He comes in at 4,700. He's got a powerful playmaker on his wing now in Jack Hughes. And I think if not goals, more assists should come in that setting. And then I also have at the wing position, I've got Carter Verhaeghe tonight for Florida at 4,000. They've got a fantastic matchup going up against Buffalo. They did a little bit of a shuffle around, and it's going to be Verhaeghe that plays on the top line with Sam Bennett, who's obviously going to be motivated for the revenge game factor, and Jonathan Huberdeau. So I love Verhaeghe here in that spot. I'm literally rounding out the rest of my offense with the Carolina Hurricanes. I love the fact that they're going up against Ottawa. I think you can get some of these guys relatively cheap or lower drafted percentages because they've been struggling a little bit lately in terms of offense. But I'm going to use the full freight of Vincent Trocheck at 4,200, Sebastian Aho, 7,500, Andrei Svechnikov, 7,600, Tuvo Teravainen at 5,300, basically their number one power play unit. And I do think it's obviously a boom or bust strategy to go that heavy into one team, but there's an opportunity here for them to put up some big points against an Ottawa team that is just leaking goals. Guys can get, you know, back in action after kind of struggling for a little bit. I'll carry that even into my defense, partially because I just spent too much money. And I needed a kind of a low cost guy here, but Max LaJoie for them logged 2 minutes of power play, 2:14 actually of power play ice time in their most recent game with Tony D'Angelo, Brett Pesce, and Ethan Bear all sidelined. So I would expect him to continue to see power play opportunities again. So at 2,500, you're really just banking on him having a good opportunity with that game. If he picks up even a couple shots at 2,500, that's a good return on investment. Because I went so low with one of my defensemen, I was able to spend up for Aaron Ekblad, who's just having a red hot season right now. He's right up there with the league leaders in terms of defensive points, and really showing why he's their power play anchor and leading the way there. 18 shots on goal in his last 5 games. So he's got a really solid floor, even if he doesn't get a point, but he's been racking up goals and assists over that stretch as well. And then in the pipes, I decided instead of going with Carolina only because of price point, I would happily use Antti Raanta if I could fit him in. But I'm going to go with Aiden Hill tonight for San Jose, $7,600, significantly cheaper. I would feel a little bit better if James Reimer was going tonight, but I'll still use Hill going against an Islanders team that is averaging just 1.88 goals per game right now on the year. Again, they're coming off having missed, having 2 games postponed due to COVID. They're still missing some of their major pieces, and I'm just not expecting them to be firing on all cylinders tonight. And I think it's a good spot to use a low-cost netminder like Aiden Hill.
AJ, I love your lineup. I'm going to ask you to consider your goaltending situation, though. I wonder, what do you think about Jacob Markstrom in his matchup against LA tonight? Markstrom's the leading goaltender in the league so far this season, and LA is a club that's really won one of their last 8 games, I believe. So that's a prime opportunity for a guy who even costs cheaper than the goalie you have in place. So maybe I've given you some food for thought, or you want to flip a coin, but I'm kind of interested to know, why might this guy be priced so low tonight? I can't figure it out. I talked about it on today's show as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Kings are a better team than Ottawa, obviously. But I do agree that it's not like they're racking up goals with any sort of regularity right now. So I do agree. I think he's a bit underpriced. And, yeah, I think that's a solid suggestion. I don't know if you've looked, Paul. I'll give you a chance to maybe check if you haven't, or maybe you're already using him, but I'd be curious to know how his price point works out on FanDuel compared to DraftKings, because I agree, a bit underpriced, it seems.
Yeah, he's much higher. He's at $8,400, AJ. And that leads me into the talk of my team. I'm not using them tonight, actually, because I love your call on Florida. I think that's the screaming hot value play on the board to stack the Panthers. I did the same thing, although I got some different names. I'll go with the goalie first, since I mentioned that. I picked Sergei Bobrovsky. He's got one loss against 10 wins so far. I think it's going to be 11-1 after tonight, with a really high win probability, as the Panthers are at home, where they're a tough out, and the Sabres are looking like easy prey over there. So I think that's going to be an easy goaltending win. And we'll go back to the top of the order here. And these are guys I mentioned earlier today, too, on that other show. When I went cheap at center as well, AJ, I think there's just a lot of value on the wings and on defense, and I wanted to get some of that in my lineup. So I talked about a couple of these guys earlier on this particular episode of podcast. In terms of building my lineup, I start with cheap centers. I go with Mikhail Granlund against Boston. I know Boston is a tough team, and probably name recognition tells you that it might be a tough matchup for the Predators, but you say that they're a tough team at home, and that's one of the toughest places for visiting clubs to go in and make a mark. And Granlund has made marks all over the place. He's got 15 points in his last 10 games, so he's producing a lot of offense, more than what might – people might be led to believe when you consider a $4,800 price point. I think that's remarkable. And then Logan Couture, a similar good value too, well down the list, $5,200 for a guy who's been a point-a-game guy all season long, and he gets to face that battered Islanders lineup. I mean, they've got some people back from the infirmary, but it's their first game back. You wonder where their legs are. So I feel really good about two cheap centers there coming in at a total of $10,000. That's Connor McDavid money almost for one player. Then I round out my squad up front with Kirill Kaprizov, who's been the signature piece for Minnesota, and he's one of the most expensive players on the board on the wing, and I got him for $7,800, hoping that he produces at least the average of 16 points in FanDuel play that he's done every game so far this season. Then starts some of the Florida names, AJ. Jonathan Huberdeau makes the grade for me. He's priced at $7,600. Aaron Ekblad, I spoke about him earlier in the show. I don't normally go big in terms of defenseman, but if this guy's having such an outstanding year, and this looks like a complete mismatch, so he'll participate in that stack that I have for $6,600. Oliver Shillington, I've spoken a lot about his career best season so far with Calgary. I think that's a big win probability for the visitors. I lean on Calgary in that matchup, and he comes in at only $4,300 for a guy who plays power play minutes and regular shift in Calgary as well. Sam Reinhart makes the grade as a top six forward against the Sabres for $5,800. And yet, Jacob Voracek, you convinced me, AJ. He comes in at only $4,400, but I like what you were selling earlier and your analysis of him, so I plugged him in. So I felt obliged to give you a tip in the nets because you gave me one on the wings. So thank you for that, buddy.
Well, in any case, I'll up the ante today. I've been using your lineups in 25-cent entries, and maybe I'm jinxing it here, but I'm going to spend up a whole dollar on your lineup today, Paul.
Wow, I feel guilty now. I might have to send you a loony if it doesn't go well.
It's not even getting me my money back if you send me a loony.
I know. I'm not taking all the responsibility. I'm kind of splitting the difference here, AJ. So that said, I think we both got compelling choices for our listeners tonight. And I think we've done a pretty good job laying out the to and fro in terms of people coming on and off the injury list. That's really the goal every week on our show, AJ. Before we sign off, any final thoughts from you, though, buddy?
No, I mean, it's continuing to be interesting to watch. You know, some teams just happen to hit a COVID kind of COVID breakout, as it were. And so far, we're up to, I think, 5 postponed games so far through the first quarter of the season, which, you know, all things considered is okay. Obviously, we'd like less. It'd be great if there were none. But hopefully, you know, we're getting through it as best we can, and we'll avoid any sort of larger impact and shutdown of any kind.
Well, AJ, and you mentioned COVID. The one player in the league that is not vaccinated by all accounts is Tyler Bertuzzi, and he made the COVID list this week. So there might be a little bit of extra concern for him, given that status. we wish him and all the others in the protocol complete recoveries. And I can't wait till we don't talk about COVID anymore on this show or even anywhere else. But it just seems to have dominated our lives. But it bears mentioning that this was the one guy that didn't take the vaccines, and now he's on the list. So hope that everything works out for him and everybody else. AJ, that wraps up another week in our show. We had a really good swing around the loop and came up with a lot of good information, I think. And I hope everybody gives it a good listen, takes notes, and take advantage of the players that we threw out there, as well as guys you might want to pick up in season-long play. So we thank you for listening to Roto-Rooter's signature fantasy hockey podcast with Statsman and AJ. In the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. And we invite you to listen to the podcast to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning. So long, everybody.